Welcome to Global Citizen Life. Today on the podcast, we have Donna Fields. Now, Donna is originally from New York City and became a teacher in New Mexico. A decade later, she considered returning home, but took a bit of a detour on the plane back to Spain. And more than 20 years later, she's still there. She's been a primary, secondary, and university teacher. She gives workshops on empowering students in their own learning and is an author of books on dynamic activities to help content and language learners transition more fluidly into new information. She also has a series of books on creating phenomenon-based learning projects, what is now becoming mandatory in many countries in Europe. She lives in the beautiful city of Valencia with a house on the beach and has another one in the mountains with a dog, six wild cats from the hills, and is extremely happy there. Well, welcome to the show, Donna.
Oh, thank you so much, Sally. Yeah, it's really a pleasure to be here. I'm just so fascinated by your mission. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Oh, thank you. Well, so when you first left the United States, and what you took that detour to Spain, what was kind of the initial plan behind that? Was it supposed to be short, and why Spain?
Well, that's a really easy question. It was supposed to be short. I come from a family that believes in travel, and so traveling for us is second nature. And I moved to New Mexico because I wanted something very different. But in New Mexico, 20 years ago, or actually we could say 30 years ago, it was very important to speak Spanish. And I thought, oh, okay, I'll go to Monterey, California for a summer and learn Spanish. That didn't work. So I went back to New Mexico, and the Spanish embassy at that point was encouraging teachers to come to Spain. Instead of being oriented to Latin America, they wanted us to think about Spain. So I said, great, I'm going to go to Spain for a month and learn Spanish. No, you don't
Sounds
learn Spanish in a month.
To me.
Right.
No.
So, I mean, while I was there, I realized that it wasn't going to be a month. I needed more time, found a job at an American school in Valencia, which is a circuit of schools. And I'm here more than 20 years later and pretty happy, pretty happy.
Well, Valencia is an amazing place. And I often say to people that because when I first went to Spain, I went to Barcelona. And I really liked it. And I often wonder if I would have went to Valencia first, if that would have been my choice, because of course, you know, pros and cons to everywhere, but Valencia is a beautiful city. And it's so much more green than Barcelona. And that's one thing coming from Canada, living in Costa Rica, there's just, Barcelona's not outside of the city. When you get outside, there's green and it's close to the mountains and things, but inside there's not a lot of green space.
Well, that's interesting, because when we think of Barcelona, or when I think of it, there's so much personality there. There's so much culture and so much art, which you don't get in Valencia. And I'm saying that because nobody here is going to be here listening to me. Valencia is a really nice size city for me. Coming from New York, so much noise and so many people. I loved living in New York. Don't miss it at all. I really like Valencia. I don't live right in the city, but all the services are there, everything you can get. But I live outside of about 20 minutes north of the city, which is perfect for me. And it's interesting you say that it's green, because we're always looking for water. I mean, we really have a struggle for water.
Oh, wow. That is interesting. I did not know that.
Yes. And actually, in Barcelona, they want, you probably know this, that they want to be independent. And at times,
yes,
they want an independent, they want to be their separate country, and they want Valencia to support them. And what they do to encourage us to support them is to threaten to cut off the water source, because most of our water sources come from Barcelona. So this is just an
really?
Interesting side note.
Well, that's
yeah.
interesting. I didn't realize that they did, that they kind of threatened a little bit.
Yes. Muy mal, muy mal. So that's interesting.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Always learning new things about Spain.
Yes. Yeah.
And so now you moved there quite some time ago, and you initially started as a student, and then you said you got the job. So did you get How did that visa work back then? I mean, I'm sure there's some changes that have obviously happened over the years, but generally, how did that work when you were going through the process?
Yeah, that's really important because I am very naive about traveling. I go pretty much where the universe sends me. The universe said, go to Burgos. I went to Burgos for a month and I realized that I needed to stay, found a job. And it turns out that it is really difficult to get residency if you don't have a job. And 5 years into my job at the American school, I needed to get out. A lot of, you know, administrative and political reasons, I needed to leave. And so after 5 years, I said, okay, I'm done. I'm going to go back to school. I went to get my doctorate at the university and started giving private classes. What I did not know was that if I had decided this even 1 year before, I would have had to leave the country. Because at that time, for 5 years, you can stay. The school gave me residency. They did all the paperwork, and it was unbelievably easy being connected to a school in the country. For other people, I see it's really difficult. The country doesn't really want to give you citizenship, and it doesn't want to give you a work visa. They want the Spaniards to have the work and have the income. But because I had, you know, it was the universe talking, luck, whatever you want to call it, I had worked in the country for 5 years. And so after that, I could stay on a work visa independent of working at the school. So that's the answer to that question, I believe.
Oh, great. Well, yes. And I do believe that obviously, you know, to get sponsorship with the work visa is difficult because of the unemployment rate there, which, I mean, it makes sense to me. Why would a country want foreigners coming in, taking jobs that locals can do? And that's every country. It just makes sense to have those rules. I do know that Spain also has what they call a non-lucrative visa. And so that is where if you're self-employed, then you can come and you have to prove you were make so much money for the last however long it is and prove that. So then you're not, you know, going to be working and taking a job away, and then you're spending your income in the country. And for retirees, they have one that's similar as well to, again, prove that they have enough pension and income coming in to support themselves. So there are a couple, but if somebody doesn't have that income or money coming in, they have to get that job or have that lined up, or they're allowed, if they're coming from North America, they're 90 out of every 180 days in the entire Schengen area. And that's a thing to be important for people to know, is that's not just you can go to Spain for 90 days, then France for 90 days, then Italy for 90 days. So it is in total. So it's there's some things definitely that people need to consider if they want to be moving and relocating.
People need to really really research it. I know that if you stay in the country too long, this is probably every country, that if they catch you leaving, you're not going to be able to ever come back in. And that's, you know, if you don't ever want to come back into the country, that's fine. But I don't think that any of us definitely, you know, want never to come into any country the rest of our lives. So yeah, money definitely has something to do with it. Again, I was very fortunate to have this tie to the school, but afterwards, I did have to show a certain amount of money in the bank account. So that was an issue. Mm-hmm. I do have a passport now, which I think has changed things. It's made things more complicated on one side and much less complicated on another side. So, and that was, you know, I don't know how much you want me to go into that, but that was another process.
Yeah, and I would actually love to hear about that, because if we look, that they say technically, like, did you, okay, there's going to be a few questions within this. So Did you have to renounce your U.S. citizenship? Because they say technically, if you're from the U.S. or Canada, you cannot have dual citizenship. So that's that passport for Spain, unless you renounce or you give the intention to renounce. But for some listeners who are from Spanish-speaking Latin American countries, I think the Philippines and a few other countries, they're allowed to have dual citizenship. So Spain is a really interesting country in the sense of it's not a blanket yes or no. So coming from the United States, it's interesting that you were able to get citizenship and a passport.
Well, there's no problem getting the passport. And I'm going to answer your question very obtusely. You're not supposed to have dual citizenship. So once you get the passport, you've made a choice. That's about as far as I'd be comfortable answering that.
Fair
it's
enough.
Something, yeah. Yeah, you definitely have to research it and you definitely have to make a choice. Right. I found someone I worked with, because I travel around the world working, someone I know who also works in Europe and is not European said, I said, you know, I can go anywhere because I have a work visa in Spain. And he said, just on the chance that you decide at some point to move to another country in Europe, it would be much easier if you had a Spanish passport. Mm-hmm. And that is true.
Absolutely. Yeah. That is true, because a work, from my understanding, though, the work visa in Spain allows you to work anywhere in Spain, but not anywhere within the European Union, or not anywhere within the Schengen countries either, because it's just Spain.
Right.
And so there's a lot of things that can sometimes be a little bit confusing, because if we talk about Europe or we talk about Schengen countries, they're not, some of them are the same and some of them are not. Like, it's not, again, it's not a blanket thing. And some people do think, well, if I get a work visa in one, since they're all connected and free travel, I can go anywhere. But that isn't the case. When it becomes that way is when you get that citizenship and you have that passport, then you have a lot more freedom, because if you wanted to move to France, let's say, after going there, you have 90 days to register. This is now where you're living. And it's quite easy as a European Union resident and citizen.
Yeah. There's something also to consider about getting the passport, which I find very advantageous. And you're Canadian. So to you, this may not impact you as much, but being American, you know how the health system is. It's unbelievably uninclusive, and people need to have a job essentially to have any coverage. In Europe, you know this, that we are covered. Even with my residency card, I was covered. The thing about having the passport is I am covered in health insurance and anywhere in Europe, and that's very important. There are actually people in all sort of parts of Europe that come to Spain for their healthcare, because Spain's healthcare is very advanced. It's one of the most advanced in Europe. And I find that surprising, because in so many other ways, it is a second world country, we could say.
Yes, that is very, very true.
Yeah, you know, you understand.
There's many challenges within Spain, but the healthcare is absolutely amazing. And even so, it does have, for people who are unaware, they have private and public. And I have a friend of mine. So I have both too, because it's very inexpensive, because I had to get private initially when I was getting my residency. I had to have it at first. And I'm only paying, I think, 50 euro. So what is that, like $60 a month, maybe?
Yeah, that's very good, actually.
Yeah.
That's very good.
But I have a friend of mine who is Spanish, and she has both too. And she was diagnosed with cancer a few years ago. And so I was like, oh, well, it's good you have, you know, private healthcare. And she said, oh, no, I'm going through the public system for all of my cancer treatment, because the public system is better for that than the private. So there's other things, like she didn't really give examples, but she was just like, there's other things, you know, that the private is good for, but with something like this, public system is much better. And most people would think, as I did, the complete opposite.
That's right. I thought so too. I was very surprised about that, but that really is the truth. I have private insurance. I think that the advantages are you don't have to wait on the lines. You don't have to wait for treatment if it's a minor treatment, but for the bigger things, the public system is much better. And actually, many of the doctors work in both. And so if they meet you in the private sector, they will arrange things so that you are in the public treatment, which is actually pretty amazing. So that is a benefit. There's one other thing. It's not about the health. It's about the passport. I think that might be interesting for you and for your listeners is that once, especially in Spain, I don't know about in other countries. In Spain, you need two last names. And obviously I'm American. I don't have two last names. I have a middle name. That is pretty, it's confusing for the Spanish. But what happened when I got my Spanish passport is that I was obligated to have two last names, my father's last name and my mother's. Fine, no problem. But what happened is it created a lot of confusion because, for instance, my name on in all my documents in the States is Donna Lee Fields. Mm-hmm. Here, they don't under a lot of times my last name will be Lee. A lot of times it may be Fields. And the Spanish passport, it's Donna Fields Feldman. The Lee has disappeared. I now have two last names. So while that may seem logical and fairly, you know, ostensibly obvious, all of my documents had to change. Yeah. And I'm still, mm-hmm. I think, 7 years later, having problems with that. The bank has to change. All the official documents have to change. And if they ask me for a document from when I was Donna Lee Fields, I have to prove that I am the same person. And that's not always easy. So again, it's something to consider.
That's actually really interesting. And it's not something that I really thought about. And I can see the challenges with that, because a lot of times with documents in Spain, as you know, they want them all issued within 6 months. So if you're changing your name, like I can't remember what I needed my birth certificate for. And I had a copy and I'm like, here it is. They're like, no, that one's older than 6 months. So, but if I order another one, it's going to be the exact same, but just the date on it. And they said, no, it has to be within 6 months. And so I can see how that can be a pain in the butt for quite some time to try to get everything changed over. Because as you originally were there, you know, even if I had the plan to do that, I still can't do it until I get that passport. And then I have to kind of backtrack to get all the other documents changed. And the bureaucracy with documentation in Spain is a bit of a nightmare.
Yes.
And so as we were saying, like, it's amazing how the healthcare is amazing.
And everything else is challenging.
Paperwork is not.
No, and it creates, it's part of the culture, because the culture is pretty much tied to the fact that nothing is easy. Bureaucracy is very complicated. And they will go, for instance, I mean, this bleeds into almost every area of the life. If I'm American, if I go out to buy, let's just say a washing machine, I do the research, I find what I want, I go to the store and buy it. That's it. Here, what they do is they go from store to store. It might take weeks, but they know that if they go to the store, they're not going to buy the washing machine. They're just going to ask questions about it. Because, and it's about the bureaucracy. You just need patience. You just need to know that things are going to happen slowly, and that's how you go through life. So yeah, I'm a freelancer. So with the invoices, for instance, it used to be Donna Lee Fields, and it used to be my residency number. Mm-hmm. But now it's Donna Fields Feldman. I have my passport number. And that means my, you know, we go into phones and we go into the internet connection. We go into what else, you know, any Amazon, anything you can think of now needs to be switched over. And you don't realize it until they say, this is not, you're not the same person, are you? So, yeah.
Yes, it is more of a hassle than what people would initially think, especially people from North America. So we think, well, we can just go in and change it. Just be like, oh, here's my old document. Here's my new document. We need to get this changed. And generally it's not too much of a hassle, but there it definitely is a lot harder.
And also, it's also very important to know that getting the passport itself is not easy. It's a whole mm-hmm. process. So I was already living in Spain. I wasn't going back and forth very often. And I had a lot of my documents in New York and I had a lot of documents in New Mexico. And so in the end, I actually had to hire an agency to do it all for me. It's not that it was so difficult once I hired that agency, but it was expensive. So
right.
It was definitely worth it. But again, the timing is very important, and there's a lot of certified mail, and there's a lot of, you know, New Mexico is a Latin state. This is based on Mexico. And so their timing is also a little slower than what you'd expect. And again, it was worth it to do it, but it was very challenging.
And I think it is something that with clients and sometimes people I talk to, I always say to them, what is your long-term goal? And knowing that can change. If if that citizenship is important, then we look at citizenship options, whether it's Spain or France or Mexico, wherever it may be, because then we're going to have to look at all those documentation that needs to be done. The amount of time that you need to spend in a country, every country's rules, like as a resident to start with, you have to spend so many days a year, or within 5 years, so many days. And usually that works out to, depending upon the country, you can be out anywhere from 1 to 3 months, kind of on average with different countries around the world. Some it's like 1 month. They're like, you want residency, you need to be here 11 months out of the year. Some will give a bit more flexibility with it. And so it is those kind of, what is the long-term goal, and then plan around it. And documentation is a big thing. So sometimes it's knowing that you're going to need that and preparing well in advance. And I found too, even with my residency, getting appointments. It's amazing how individuals cannot get appointments, but a lawyer gets an appointment very easily.
Right away. Yeah.
Right away. You can try for weeks and weeks and weeks and be online every, you know, whenever new appointments come up and there's nothing. And so there is sometimes, it's the difference of time. If you can, you have a long time to do it. But I find a lot of times in Spain, things go substantially smoother when you hire a law firm or a lawyer or somebody to do those things for you. And it just goes faster and smoother. So it is definitely worth the money spent, even though technically, because I'm the type of like, I can do everything myself. I don't, and I started that with my residency and I'm like, I got all, but I can't get this appointment. I can't. And so finally I hired a lawyer and she was great. She's still my lawyer now because I said, I have all this, like I have all this stuff done. And then she's like, okay, well, here, it's this much. These are the things. She got the appointment right away. She followed up and she did everything very quickly. And I sent her referrals now. So anybody who is in specifically Barcelona, because another thing people need to be aware of is Spain has 17 autonomous regions. So they are all somewhat self-governing. So the documentations or things that you may need in, say, Barcelona may vary slightly to Valencia or down to Malaga. And it could be just one document that you do need here and you don't need there or something, but to be aware. So when people go online and they talk to people, you know, I'm in a Facebook group. Hey, I'm, you know, want to get residency. What do I need? You got to be careful sometimes with those groups because depending upon the autonomous region that you're going to be in, you may or may not need certain documents.
Yeah, and that, again, permeates into every part of the society. I'm in education, and the school system is different in all different 17 provinces. So the publishers, I work with different publishers, and they actually publish different editions for each province because there are different criteria. It's unbelievable. They'll say to me, we want you to work on this edition, but we can't tell you when to start because we need to know how the government is going to change their decisions, et cetera, et cetera. It's just... the nice thing is that there's so much variety in Spain, and the challenging part is the legal, the administrative differences. And so, yeah, that's very important to be aware of. And also the languages. Here we have Valenciano, there's the Catalan, we up in, you know, Gallego. Different languages are also, they influence a lot of the decisions. And so people need to be aware of that as well and be respectful because in each province, they're very serious about their languages.
Yes, it reminds me when I was first living in Barcelona, I had a handyman come in. I can't remember. I needed the washing machine, the dishwasher, something fixed. And my Spanish was not great. And he was asking me something. And I was like, I don't understand. And then when he shows me, I'm like, oh, baño, because he was asking to use the bathroom. And he's like, no baño. And then he said, because he was Catalan and he wanted me to know what it was in Catalan, because even though I was in Barcelona, I should be speaking Catalan.
Yeah.
And there's some like, not all are quite that kind of strict about it, because there's many people obviously in Barcelona. It's like, oh, Spanish is great, but you know, and it's the same with Basque country. They speak Basque.
Yes.
There's going to be some people that are, you're in this region, You want to speak it, even if you head north of Barcelona within the Catalonia region. There's some towns that do not have menus in Spanish, do not have menus in English. It's all Catalan.
Wow. Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, I know that they're pretty militant about it. And if you talk to someone who is militant about it, there's no two ways. There's no, there's no shades of it.
No.
I'm in the pueblos, in the villages. In Valencia, they don't speak Valenciano. They don't speak Valencian because, and that comes from the Civil War, where it was very important not to speak Valencian because you could literally be killed for it, unfortunately. But there wasn't as much vigilance in the pueblos. And so that's where it's spoken. And once in a while, I will speak with someone who insists on speaking Valenciano. And I can understand it up to a point if I know what they're talking about, but answer them. I mean, you know, they just have to, I understand their political views. They want to maintain their language, but I haven't found that that's one of my big goals. So.
And I was the same with Catalan, and I understood and I respected it, but I was just thinking from my point of view, focusing and learning Spanish, which is spoken a lot in a lot of countries, several countries around the world speak Spanish. It is more beneficial for me personally to become good at Spanish than to learn Catalan, which is only spoken in a very small region of Spain.
Right.
And to, you know, respectful of it. And I understand, because it is, I mean, in a way it's sad that there's so many languages that are slowly dying.
Like yes.
There aren't. And so it is sad to a certain degree to see so many languages that will not be spoken in, you know, in a few decades. But I mean, for people to speak so many languages, it's impractical with the way the world is now, with travel and international business and things like that, for somebody, you know, if we just think of even people from big corporations and travel a lot for work, there's no way of speaking every language to every country or dialect within the country. I mean, if we just look at Spain, there's many languages that are within Spain that even Spanish people don't speak all the languages in Spain.
That's right. No, that's very right. And then, and I agree with that. And actually have been giving talks on the fact that languages are both add to cultures and separate people. And so we need to sort of balance this idea between one language. English right now is more of a global language and it connects people. On the other hand, down in Alicante, for instance, there's a huge British population and this British population does not speak Spanish. I don't know if they've just decided we are not going to speak Spanish because we don't need to, but they're pretty adamant about it. And I'm not sure if that's in the spirit of international living.
I agree. And I say that as my Spanish is still not nearly as good as what it should be at this point. But a lot of times I at least try or make an attempt and little things I can do and I can understand more. And then I have what, as you would know, that we call our Spanglish. It's right. My mix of Spanish words that I know, thrown in some English words because I don't know the Spanish one into a sentence. And, you know, and sometimes like people will laugh or, you know, or they'll just then say it all in Spanish. And I'm like, oh, okay. But yeah, I think whenever we're in another country, we should at least have some basics of that local language, you know, like, and I mean like basics, it doesn't take a lot to just even if you're never going to be fluent, it's fine. Like even my level of Spanish, I always at least please and thank you. And I try to order some basic things, know a menu, and stuff like that. And I think it's important to do. But there's also, there's a lot of culture that even I miss out on because my Spanish isn't as good as what it should be. And whether it's people telling jokes or just talking, or I'm on the metro and it stops, or it's not, and it's like stop for a while, and then half the people get off, they make an announcement. Like, what are they? Do I get on? Do I get off? Do I get off? Do I stay on? Like, what am I supposed to do?
Right.
Because of not understanding. And so having basic understanding as well also makes life more enjoyable and part of the culture. And isn't that in a way the reason why? Like, there's reasons why we left our home countries. And so why, what I don't understand is sometimes, and I don't want to be picking on British people. I have fabulous friends that are British, but they'll be like, oh, well, we want Sunday roast. I think it's Sunday roast that's big there, or something. And it's, this place should have it. And I would think, but you're not there.
Right.
So why,
right.
You know, why should we have it? It's like me saying, well, I want to celebrate Canada Day. Why aren't we selling Canada Day in Montenegro? We're like, what is Canada Day? We don't care about it. Like, you're not in Canada.
Right. You're here.
And so, you know, and to then celebrate the days that they do. And now that's up to me to participate in those celebrations, but also be respectful of, oh, everything's closed for 4 days because you're celebrating. I can't remember. They were just recently celebrating something last month and everything was closed for 4 days. And I thought, wow, that's something. I was like, okay, well, make sure I get to the grocery store before everything closes.
That's right.
Because otherwise I'm eating out. But that's the way it is here. And that's part of moving abroad. That's part of leaving the country that we were in for different experiences, different life, different culture, and immersing ourselves. Because if I don't want to do the things that are done in this country while I'm here, then I shouldn't be here.
I think that's probably right. I think that it's really important to try. And as I said in the beginning, I've traveled a lot. When I was younger, I also lived in different countries, and Spain was the most difficult. Spain was the most difficult for me. And I don't know why that is necessarily. It wasn't, I think part of it is the schedule, as you're saying. And Spain is still, at least in Valencia, deep into the siesta schedule.
Oh,
so
yes.
People start in the morning, there's about a 2.5 hour break, and then they start again. And nighttime is serious. You know, I am not a nighttime person. I'm a morning person. And I finally come to terms with the fact that I have no need to prove to them that I'm interesting. And so go out at night. I tried it in the beginning, didn't like it. I have a whole group of friends that I don't have because I don't go out at night. I like to be at home when, you know, I'm from New York. When it becomes dark, we're supposed to be at home. But what I found is that I started working with the schedule. The Spanish will go home at 1:30 or 2 because that's when they're supposed to be home and eating lunch. I go to the store at that time. That's the best time to go to the store because nobody's there. It's the same thing at about 7 o'clock, about 8:39. They've gone home. If I need to do something, that's the best time to do it. It's quiet. So when I started working with the system, and then instead of being so frustrated because I couldn't get anything done 24 hours a day, I mean, it's so American. We are so spoiled. And Sunday, they're just now, some stores are opening, but most of them don't open. And what is it about? It's because family is important.
Right.
You don't work on Sunday because you're supposed to be with your family. And I say that to Americans sometimes when they come over and they say, yeah, but I need to buy things. I said, no, but they
buy
need
it on
to do
Saturday, just like everybody else does, or wait
That's
till
right.
Monday. If you forgot, it's like, sorry about your luck.
That's right. So you need to adjust. You definitely need to adjust. And as you say, if you don't want to adjust, then go back home.
Mm-hmm. Or try somewhere new that has different way of lifestyle or something. If you're not liking how it is in one country, depending upon what you look at, there's 206 or 211 countries in the world, depending upon whose statistics we're looking at. So there's
right.
There's a lot of option out there, and we're never stuck. But yeah, adjusting was big for me because I would work in the morning and then I would like to take a break in the afternoon and go out. And if I needed to go, grocery stores were okay because grocery stores were still open, but to the bank or just sometimes some small specific stores that I would shop at would be closed. And it was adjusting for me because so many times I would go out and I'd go somewhere and be like, dang it, closed. Okay, I'll have to come back later. And I just had to readjust my routine for it. But I adjusted. And once I got used to it and I adjusted, then it's just a new routine. And it's like, okay, here, I now have a new routine. This is how I do things. And I do love Spain. I do love parts of it. I got to admit, there's parts that are, you know,
challenging, more challenging.
But there's no, for me anyway, because I don't want to, you know, speak for others, but for me, up until this point, I don't believe there is a perfect place in the world. I think, and some people may find a perfect for them, and that's fabulous. I've traveled a lot, and I wished I could take a few things from different countries and pull them into one. But that's the part of life, though, too, is, you know, it's adjusting. And sometimes adjusting, it helps us have more patience, more understanding, more growth. And that's a good thing about, you know, not finding a place that's, quote, too perfect.
Yeah, what is perfect anyway? I mean, if it was perfect, then we wouldn't have many challenges. The other thing that's is, you know, if you want to get on a semi-spiritual perspective of this, if you're looking for something because you're not happy where you are, you're going to be bringing whatever that is with you. So be clear, as you were saying before, be clear on your goals. If it's because you don't like something where you're living now, and it's something that you could actually change through behavior, take a look at that, because you're going to bring it with you. It's going to happen again. If it's simply because you want a different experience and you want a, you know, to explore a different culture, wonderful. But, you know, I've been here more than 20 years and my Spanish is fairly fluent. I still have an American accent. I will always have an American accent, but people still always refer to me as the American. So I actually don't care anymore. But what I want to say is, unless you're in Spain, they had a dictatorship for a long time. They still have a lot of monovision, and people who weren't born here and don't speak Spanish fluent without an accent, they stand out still. And so one thing you just need to know about Spain is probably you will be considered a foreigner the entire time you're here. You know what? That's fun. That's and okay. Or you're special, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And it's also good to have a mix of friends. Like, I think when we move to a country, it's important to have some local friends, but I also feel sometimes too, for me anyway, it's important to have some expat friends. And it's just because then we kind of get a little bit of both. So local, they help us understand how things are done, can tell us about, you know, the culture, the what they're celebrating, why, those types of things to be part of that cultural community. Expat friends are also good because they understand the challenges that we go through by being an expat. And it's not always easy. There's so many challenges, and it's hard to explain to somebody that just doesn't understand.
I think that's such an important point. I started working in an American school, which was mostly Spanish, but there were Americans there. And that made a huge difference because we were all going through the same thing at the same time. When I left, I still kept a couple of people. I mean, one of my closest friends is American. She's married to a man who's Spanish. Her children are Spanish because they grew up here. But it would be inconceivable. I think there's so many times still more than 20 years later when I have to run things by her and I say, you know, how, and she understands, she's been here more than 30 years and she still goes through the same kind of bumps in the road as I do. And so, yes, that's really important. It would be wonderful to think that all you need are people from that country. But as you say, if we move when we're adults, we are used to certain things. They're just our brain patterns, our habits. We are used to certain things. And while we probably will get used to a different way of life, it's really important to vent. It's really important. I'm not talking about complain. I'm saying vent and talk it out and you feel so much better. So wonderful point. Yes.
And sometimes it's just because, like, there's times that I think when I'm in Canada, it's so easy to do this task and I can just go do it and I can't. And then when I'm in Spain, whether it's more bureaucracy, takes more time. Like I don't have a car there, but I had a car when I lived in Costa Rica. So that would be probably a better example to compare of a car in Canada. You go to the registry, you get your little sticker. You know, if something's wrong, you take it to the mechanic. If it's after so many years old or you get an inspection, simple. Costa Rica, you have to get this inspection done every year. And as a foreigner, they really inspect everything. Like one time I failed because my car had too much oil in it.
Oh my goodness.
And so then you have to go, and there's only like one place that does it. So it's an all day ordeal to drive to this place, go through the inspection. And yeah, sometimes it's just like so frustrating because it's, and I don't like to word, I'm really trying to get rid of the word should out of my vocabulary because things are just the way that they are. But it's very frustrating when I'm very used to things easy one way, adapting to another, that there are times that, yes, we like to vent to our friends because they understand. But somebody from Costa Rica, they're like, oh, what's the problem? That's the way it is. That's the way it's always, like, it is the way it is. Like, they don't know that there is another way that we feel is so much easier than it, but they're like, so what's the problem? And but with our other American Canadian friends, they're, oh yeah, we know, oh, you've got to go do that today, Retire Bay, oh, good luck, you know, like, and it's those things. So that's why having those expat friends are important, as well as the locals, because you're now in that country.
And it's actually a very important point. I would like to say this, you need to be aware of licenses, because when I came to Spain, it wasn't, they weren't really connected to technology. Technology wasn't as intricate when I came 20 years ago, but the law was that you could drive for 6 months on your license, but after that 6 months, you needed a Spanish license. Well, nobody I knew took that seriously. And I actually waited 3 years. Now at that time, I could get away with it. But now it's, if I had been stopped by the police or the Guardia Civil, which, you know, the Guardia Civil is the military police. If I had been stopped, I would have been in big trouble. So it's something you just need to research. And getting the license is not easy. There's sort of a mafia around it in Spain. They will only pass a certain amount of, it's unspoken, but they will only pass a certain amount of people every day, because if you fail the test 3 times, you have to pay again to get another chance at the exam. And they do that a lot. I think I failed.
It's a moneymaker.
It's a moneymaker. I passed the written test and failed the driving test 3 times. It was, you know, they do it on purpose. They try to confuse you on purpose. And so I had to pay twice more to take the exam, and finally passed only because my instructor took pity on me, and he knew the inspector. And so I finally passed. But it is not unusual at all to take the test 4 or 5 times, but I'm talking times 3. So you're paying a lot of money.
Wow.
However, if you don't have a license, it's serious. So it's something, and again, people need to take into account.
And another thing on that note as well, because generally speaking within North America, and I don't know 100% about the United States, but it's very cheap to get a driver's license within North America. There's the written part and the test, and the cost of that is extremely cheap, especially compared to Europe. So if people think, oh, well, maybe I'll get my license once I arrive in Europe, I've talked to a few different people, and I don't know specifically about Spain, but my friend from Italy and my friend from Poland, and I believe it's in the ballpark of, like, it's over 1,000 euro to get for European citizens when they go to get their license. It's well over 1,000 euros to get their driver's license. So if you're from North America, it will save you money to at least get the license, practice, do your driving. Don't think, oh, well, maybe if I'm in Spain or in Europe, maybe in the future I'll get my driver's license. It is quite expensive to get it. And maybe as a foreigner, that's why they make you take the test so many times, because they want to get some of that money out of you.
Yeah, but no, I'm saying this is Spanish also. They will do it to everybody. Mm-hmm. You also have to pay for 10 classes. No matter if you've driven your whole life or not, you have to pay for 10 classes, and then you pay for the exam too. It is a whole
system. It's almost like taking your license from the very beginning. A very easy, I'm just going to transfer my license over and maybe do a written test and that's it.
You're a new
driver.
Yes. They want that money. They want that money. And so, yeah, you have to pay for it. But, you know, I did it and I have my license, and all I do now is renew it. I don't have to do it again, but it's just another colorful part of living abroad.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of those different colorful parts. So tell us a little bit about now what you're doing. So you said that you're doing some freelance work. You've been through the school systems quite a bit. That's how you got there. And so now what are you doing for work? And explain that a bit.
Interesting. Well, I'm still, if people ask me, I go into the schools and I do coaching and I do workshops and I try to help them moving to project-based learning, which is more authentic learning. It's quite a challenge here in Spain because teachers are very traditional and they have a very fixed mindset in general. It's not easy. It's kind of pushing a huge cart up a mountain, like a train up a mountain. On the one hand, I have a lot of work, but on the other hand, it's frustrating. So when I work with Americans, for instance, people love these ideas. When I work with the Spanish, they love the ideas, but won't implement them. So right now I'm still doing some of those workshops. I'm still traveling around the world. I'm putting a lot of my work on digital, which I'm really comfortable with it. I love doing things online. I mean, there's nothing like being in the room with people. We need to remember we're humans. But Absolutely. I really enjoy giving workshops online, putting my activities online, and offering online courses with community weekly sessions, because we definitely need to keep in touch with people who are using our materials. But it's very satisfying and much more challenging than I thought. Much more challenging. When I first started sort of businesses, digital businesses, everyone was telling, people love telling success stories. They love their success stories. What they don't tell you is just how hard it is and how much work it is. Extremely satisfying once you get it all done, which is never, but I'm pushing through. I really like it. Yeah.
Well, that's great. And it's true. And that's one thing that I like about this podcast and that I want to bring and shed light to is there's great things about many countries and I speak to many people, but there's also some issues or some things that we have to deal with. I don't like to really use the word cons, like pros and cons, but there's always going to be some challenges, and those challenges are harder for some people than others, different for some people, and vary from country to country. But that's like life. We have challenges. I had people sometimes ask me, they're like, well, don't you ever get lonely? And I said, yes, occasionally. I said, but do you ever get lonely? And you've lived in your country for how many years? Are you grew up in this town? Like, people do. That's just a part of life. And not if everything is rainbows and butterflies and good, then I always wonder, where's the unicorn? Because something's not right, or I'm only getting a small portion of it. And people need to know that there's always going to be some type of challenges, but that's, when we get past them, that's what makes things great.
That's absolutely true. I also think it's very important for people to know who they are. I don't need a lot of people to feel recharged. I actually recharge by myself. If you're a person that recharges with other people, then you need to find some way to meet people. And it's not very difficult, really. You just find people who have the same passions as you do. I haven't needed that because, again, I'm very happy in a house with a dog and a lot of cats. But I also am connecting a lot more online, and I find that very satisfying. When I need, because of technology, for instance, I can call my sisters and my brother anytime I want. That wasn't true when I first moved here. It wasn't true when I lived in different countries 30, 40 years ago. Right. Now it's much easier. So it's very important that you know what your needs are, how you feel recharged, if people tire you or energize you, and then if then find a way to satisfy, to recharge yourself however you do. And it is definitely challenging finding a group of people that you mesh with in a different country, especially if you don't have children. Especially if you don't start in a business, if you just go there without work and without children, but it's definitely possible as well. And that's, as you say, is the adventure.
And that's when the hobbies, what do you like to do?
That's right.
You know, it's what do you like to do? And then go to those places that have those activities. So
yes,
like I like warm weather, beach, jogging, being outside. So that's what I'm drawn to. Even here in Montenegro, I've got friends, like I'm at a beach area, and we don't get snow in this area, but behind us there's mountains and there's a snow resort. And so just yesterday, one of my friends here was actually like, oh, well, you're from Canada. You must go skiing. And, you know, we'll go skiing this winter. And I said, yeah, I won't. She's like, what? And I'm like, well, I have skied and snowboarded. I'm like, that's a cold weather sport. I don't like it. That's why I left Canada. I don't like cold. Don't do cold weather sports. Thank you very much. I said, however, if they have a really nice spa there, I'll come up and I'll enjoy the day at the spa and do spa things where it's nice and warm while you guys go out and ski and then join you for dinner after. So there, you know, there's ways of finding things that you enjoy. And it's important because you're not escaping you, as we said earlier.
That's
like
right.
I must know me, because wherever I move to, I seem to follow me.
So important, Sally. So important. And I will say though, I am an introvert and I really do like being by myself. However, my dog does not. My dog likes to go to different cafes. So she doesn't like being in the house. So what I started doing was I have a laptop. I go from one cafe to another all morning, and then I come home and eat, and I do it all afternoon. She's very happy. It has taken me literally, and this is really sad, it has taken me 20 years to realize that when people in Spain go to a cafe, it is because they want to socialize. When I go to a cafe, it's because I need to work. I have my computer. My dog is you know, begging people for, you know, tostadas and croissant and things like that. They think that I'm there by myself and I must be lonely, so they all talk to me. Why am I saying this? Because my goal is to get my work done. What they perceive is that there's someone there that needs to be talked to. And what happens? Because I go from one cafe to another, I know everybody in every town I go to. I mean, literally, people know me because of my dog. They see my dog, they know I'm there. And at first I thought, you know, all I want to do is get my work done. And now I think, for goodness sake, this is part of living in a country with this little town. I see the same people every day. I've gotten to really love the idea of knowing half the town, because I'm at they call them bars. They don't really call them cafes, although families are welcome at these cafes. So there's a dichotomy there. I didn't mean to get to know everybody in town that way, but I have. And so it is very fulfilling in a very introvert way.
No, that's yeah. Great. And there's so many ways to meet people, and we could continue on talking for a long time about that, but I want to be respectful of your time and our listeners' time as well. So you're doing a lot of things online. If people were interested in finding out what you're doing and how you're doing it, where is the best place for them to find you?
Thank you so much for asking. Yeah, I'm very proud of the webpage I have. It's called scaffoldingmagic.com. And I have a lot of activities there. I also have, you know, my consulting, my coaching business begins there. So people can find me there and find activities. They can get in touch with me. And I also have a podcast, you know, it's called Doorways to Learning. And I just have so much fun speaking with educators all over the world and finding out what their initiatives are. So this has been absolutely wonderful, because I never knew that there was coaching for people who wanted to move around the world. I love what you're doing, Sally.
Oh, well, thank you. And it's great. I mean, I love helping people. And I know for many people, it's a scary move for some. It can be whether it's because they want to and they're unsure, they're going with their spouse or partner because they've been transferred. And for me, I've kind of forgotten about what that's like, because I'm looking at potentially moving internationally for my fifth time. So it'll be my sixth country. And so when people ask me questions, it's so natural for me. And so when I can help people, because I'm so used to it, I just think it's great. And the world is amazing. There's so many great people in the world. I meet fabulous people everywhere I go. And nature is so beautiful in so many places. You know, a plug for Montenegro, where I'm at now, tiny little country in the Balkans in Europe, and it is so beautiful. Like, even when I'm hiking or I'm out or I see different photos of like what friends have done and where they've gone, and it's just so amazing. So I just think there's such a beautiful world to see out there that we kind of need to redefine what our definition of success is and enjoy life instead of having that kind of North American working all the time to buy stuff to try to make us happy because we're not happy because we're working all the time, to be working less and enjoying things that we're doing. And then we're happy. And then we realize we don't need as much money and to work as much because we're doing the things that we enjoy doing. And it just makes our lives happier and healthier and better in so many ways. So if I can help people do that, that's just my goal. Is in the, we're here for a short period of time. Well, I kind of say it two ways. Life is short when you're enjoying it. Even if you live till you're 100, it goes by fast. But if you're not enjoying it, oh, it is long and painful.
Yeah.
Which do you prefer? Long and painful or fast and joyful? I prefer fast and joyful.
Wow, there was a thought. There's a thought.
I got to write that one down. That was actually like really good. Well, Donna, again, I want to thank you very much for your time. And we'll put in the show notes links to everything there to make it easy for everybody. And I know the listeners got a lot of valuable information, especially about Spain. And Spain is wonderful. I still spend a lot of time there. And just to be aware, there's challenges, but it is a fabulous country.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And as you were saying, people here work to live. And that's a huge difference from North America. And so that's what I'm ingesting. And so, yeah. And thank you so much for having me on and asking me these questions. It helps me reevaluate what I've been doing. So thank you.